Hey guys, this is Lauren over at Century 21 Property Advisors. Welcome to the podcast.
So, thank y'all for being here with me today and spending some time with me. I'm glad that I finally got approved to do these CE classes for you guys, and so we'll get it. You know, I want to come in and do as many as you guys need. So, we can do it pretty inexpensively. So what we're going to talk about today is what kills, lending-wise, what can kill a deal? You know, what can make a loan fall apart? Some things to expect to learn today. What types of issues are common, how to spot a potential problem, and how to avoid a pitfall. And you guys are all pretty experienced agents, so this will be new for you, yeah. Which is good. There's nothing, you know, it's always good to know what's coming. Giving you some basics on loans. Get out of my way so I can read. You've got your agency stuff, which is your conventional loans, your Fannie Mae, your Freddie Mac, and they're pretty black and white. You know, here are their guidelines. Here's what they will allow you to do. Here's the kind of loans they'll do. Here's their credit scores. Their stuff is pretty set. Very little leniency to what they do. I'm actually going to go back one. Because I think it talks about FHA in a second as well. So FHA is another part of the lending options that we have. They're a little more relaxed than the agency stuff is. They'll give a little more on their debt ratio than a conventional loan will. They'll let you have a little more leniency on that credit score than a conventional loan will. So that's good.
So what's Fannie and what's Freddie? Conventional is either one?
Both. Great question. So they're both government agencies.
Right.
They're not really competing, but they kind of are. Fannie Mae is the bigger one, because everybody knows Fannie Mae. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mac is a smaller one. For the majority, they do the exact same stuff, but they both have some little stuff that they do that the other one doesn't. Like, they'll do, both of them have, Freddie Mac for years and years had a loan program that utilized, or that allowed you to do some repairs. Well, now Fannie Mae has rolled one out 3 or 4 years later because they're like, oh, that's successful with them, so we'll do it too. Both are government agencies, and roll back a little bit in history, both were actually taken over by the government in the meltdown of 08 and 09. And
they weren't government agencies?
They were government sponsored before that, okay. But they were profitable, privately ran agencies. Well, when the meltdown happened and there was a lot of foreclosures that started to happen, they started to become insolvent. They were there'll be a couple of those today. It's gonna happen. So sometimes that's the best part of being filmed, just to let you know I'm gonna make mistakes. The words in the brain, the mouth don't always connect, right?
But Fannie and Freddie are always gonna only be conventional.
Correct. So prior to 08, they were government agencies, they sold stock, and they were very, very profitable. Well, then the government took them over, bailed them out, put $1 billion into them to keep them functional because they knew that the country needed it and the lenders needed it to keep lending to the housing market. Since 2008, the government rules that they put in place cash-wise, very, very jacked up in that they're paying back interest first and principal last, but they are now profitable again and a cash cow for our government. Hmm. The government's kept them under their wing and said, yeah, we're still going to keep Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac under here because they are making so much money off of them.
So there was $1 billion loan and then now Fannie and Freddie are paying it back, but they're still...
Yeah, actually they're not letting Fannie and Freddie completely pay it back
because they
want to keep them under their wing.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're letting Fannie and Freddie pay back all this interest when they could have paid back the loan twice already. And that was less, 10 years ago. Well, kind of, yeah. So the credit and what credit is first and foremost, whatever lender looks at. So as y'all are talking to somebody, and we always talk about credit scores. Credit scores is the bottom line of what we're looking at. There are very few ways around a credit score. Yeah. Very, very few. If you've got a credit score, that is what it is. Now, if you don't have a credit score, we've got some options. We can do some manual underwrites. We can build credit for you. But credit scores are kind of broken into different ranges. Credit scores, now this says 300. I've never seen anything under about a 420. And you have to work to have credit under a 450. I mean, you have to be physically working at it.
Yeah.
Purposely not paying anything ever on time. And that is work to never pay something on time. So I always say credit scores range from 400 to 850. So this is telling you 3 to 9. higher the better. The majority of loan programs want you to have at least a 640. That is publicly what everybody says. Now there's options down to 620. There's options down to 580. Some lenders on a case-by-case basis say they'll go to a 500 on an FHA loan. That is very, very rare. You have to have good money down and very difficult to accomplish. At Guild, we'll do an FHA down to 580. Once you get under 620, it becomes difficult to do a loan. So as a lender, when I say, yes, we can do this, but they've got a 595 credit score, no, this is going not going to be an easy process to go through.
Is that what y'all call manual underwrites? Because it won't go through the system?
No, we can still get a system approval, uh-huh. But the extra questions that we have to ask, like they have to have money in reserves, there can't be any gifts. I mean, we have to verify their rental history. There's 10 extra things we have to do when you go under a 620. A manual underwrite is, and we'll kind of talk about it in a second as well, if you have no credit scores. The system won't give you an approval because you have no scores.
Right.
That's when we're building alternative credit. But like if you have a bankruptcy, it'll kick you to a manual underwrite because the system, and we'll talk about these in a minute, of the timelines on bankruptcies, foreclosures, things like that.
So that's when the manual
underwrite. That's when the manual underwrite comes in usually. Okay. Or they've got the scores, but the system's not reading something correctly. We'll talk about that. Maybe they have disputed accounts on their credit. Okay. We'll talk about those in a second, because those can be a killer and can kick you to a manual. Okay. When you're doing a manual underwrite, your leniency on your debt ratio goes away. Where on an FHA, you can take that debt ratio up to 50 and sometimes above.
Okay, debt ratio. You're talking about the house payment plus all of their normal monthly expenses.
On their credit report.
On their credit report cannot be more than 50% or
correct.
Whatever the percentage is.
On a manual, it can't go over 43.
Okay, but that's the proposed house payment plus other bills.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So, we talked about this. Credit score is not the only determining factor, but it is. And here's your disputes line. Okay? So, prior to 08, and I say this often, loan officers, our jobs are to get loans closed. We find loopholes, we find ways around things, we figure out within the parameters that we're given how to get loans done. Okay? So if you give us a set of rules and we find 4 loopholes in the rules, you can bet every loan officer is using those 4 loopholes as long as they're there. Disputes used to be a loophole. When I started in the mortgage business in 2001, you could go in and dispute a trade line on your account. And then the automated systems that we use wouldn't see it anymore. So if you had a bunch of collections, a bunch of negative stuff, but decent, okay scores, you could go in and dispute those collections and then get an automated approval.
Even if those really were your debts.
Even if they were your debts. Because once they were disputed, the automated system no longer saw those accounts. It made them invisible. And I mean, you can imagine every loan officer used that option. Let's go dispute these 3 and let's go. Well, about 2008, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA figured that out. Oh, this is what these guys are doing. We're gonna take that away now. So now, if there's disputed accounts on their credit report, we either A, have to do a manual underwrite, more paperwork, lower debt ratios, more difficult file to accomplish, or the borrower has to go in and remove the dispute. And I'm not really sure. I mean, this is just kind of showing you some scores and stuff. The next page is showing you right here. So it'll show us right there that the account information was disputed. And so when we see that now, we either A, know we have to do a manual underwrite, or B, the customer has to go in and remove that dispute from the credit bureaus.
How do they do that?
Can take 30 to 45, sometimes 60 days. Because they have to call that lender, so this borrower would have to call Midland Mortgage, and in writing, they would have to say, we are no longer disputing this account. Then Midland Mortgage has to send that to TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. They have to update their bureaus to the credit report, and then we have to be able to pull a new credit report.
Do they have to get current on those debts?
Yes, especially if it's a mortgage.
Uh-huh.
Mortgage, when you're refinancing or buying, they don't want to see a late in the past 12 months.
Right.
That is a big, bad X.
So anything that they were disputing in the past, now they're going to remove that dispute. They also have to get current.
They don't necessarily have to get current.
Okay.
So like on collections, they can remove the dispute, but the collection can still stay there. But now the automated system is going to see that collection, and it's going to go into the overall calculation of, do they get an approval? So in the grand scheme of things, is it better to pay it off?
Sure.
Yes. Because if it's disputed and has a zero balance, we can ignore it anyways. You don't have to go remove the dispute.
Okay.
So there's some, and I'm not going to go through all of them because there's about a dozen of them, but there's some little ins and outs. If there's only one dispute, 9 times out of 10, we're okay. Sometimes this is that Fannie Freddie situation. Sometimes Fannie will read it and Freddie will miss it, so we automatically roll over to a Freddie loan.
Okay.
So that's kind of, you know, y'all look at, and I'm not saying y'all, but some realtors will say, well, they got the credit score, they ought to be approved, let's go. It's not that easy. And that's why sometimes it takes us hours to get an approval the way we need it to be, or a day. And sometimes, like the way my brain works, if I'm struggling and fighting with one, I'll put it to the side. I'm going to set them over here, and in the morning I'll pick it back up. Because 9 times out of 10, as I sleep, on the back of my brain and the Rolodex that I've got back here is spinning. And I walk in the next morning, I'm like, all right, here's our solution, let's go.
So the consumer doesn't know if it's Fannie or Freddie.
No.
They just know they're getting a conventional loan.
9 times out of 10, correct.
Okay.
Unless the lender tells them, hey, I've got to do this. And most don't. Most just say, you're getting a conventional loan, and we're going to keep it, or it's going to be sold. That's usually all the consumer knows. It's a good point, though. Okay, so they've developed a flyer for this one, but I did not print it for you guys just yet because it's one that you guys don't necessarily need as much. How long do I need to wait before I can borrow again? And I talked about this a second ago. When you have a bankruptcy, when you have a foreclosure, those things affect, one, your credit, and then two, it affects when you can purchase a house again. So y'all know that there's two kinds of bankruptcies, right? What are they?
7 and 13.
Yeah, for individuals.
But I don't really know what the difference is in the two.
We'll talk about it. So you got a 7, you got a 13. The difference is really easy. On a 7, you write everything off, it's gone. I'm not paying anything back, it's a chapter 7, all this debt is in the trash, and I'm moving forward. So you have to wait longer, if you've done a 7, to buy a house. A 13, you set up with a judge a payment plan. I'm going to pay these debts back at a reduced scale to make these creditors happy. So that's the difference. Normally you're in that payment plan for anywhere from 3 to 7 years, depending on what you've got.
But that doesn't stay on your credit as long as the 7.
They both stay on your credit for a minimum of seven years. Sometimes they'll stay on your credit for more if you keep an account through the bankruptcy. And like if you keep a credit card and somebody accidentally said it was in the bankruptcy, but then you took it back out, you can do that. But that credit card on the credit report will say included in BK, even though you may still be using it. And so for us, we got to go back and say, okay, when was the BK? Because it's not reporting on your judgments, your public records anymore.
So you'd rather see a 13 than a 7 when
yes.
you pull credit.
Yes.
And once the people are making payments, then they're not getting negative reports from those creditors on their credit any longer?
Correct. Okay. Now, depends on how the creditors report. Sometimes they'll just show it in bankruptcy and leave it there. Like a mortgage, once you put a mortgage into a bankruptcy, it completely disappears like a credit report. Okay. Which is really weird for us. Because sometimes we're like, okay, what happened? Where'd it go? Oh, I had a bankruptcy back then. All right, well, we got to do some different things now. But some things that are interesting to look at, and this is broken down by loan program this way, and then by, let's say, issue going across. So looking at the bankruptcy on top, there's differences in Chapter 7s and Chapter 13s. FHA and VA, pretty much if you do a Chapter 7, you're 2 years, period, from being able to buy anything.
2 years? Minimum. That's really not that bad.
It's not that bad, you're right. People think 7, and it's not 7.
Yeah, that's not that bad.
And another
USDA
difference.
And USDA is included in that, too.
Do what?
And USDA.
And USDA is correct. Now look, there is a difference between Fannie and Freddie. Fannie wants 4 years, Freddie wants 2 years. One of those differences between the two companies. Mm-hmm. But if you look at a 13, your conventional stuff still wants 2 years, but your what we call our government stuff, FHA, VA, USDA, we call them government loans. Yeah. They want 12 months of payments on time. So you can still be in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy and buy a house.
Wow. So are you talking about their payments towards the bankruptcy? And that's reported on their credit?
No.
We have to go to the judge,
okay. Or they have to go to the judge and get a payment schedule. And the judge also says, here's their payment schedule. Yes, they can afford a payment of this much for a house.
Okay.
So the judge is involved in our approval process.
Okay.
Now, if it's completed and what we call discharged, they can buy a house 1 day out of discharge. Because
okay.
That means they've made their payments on time. They've fulfilled the Chapter 13's requirements. And I'm actually doing one right now. He's 6 months out of a Chapter 13 BK. We started talking about it. I said, okay, how long are you in your payments? He said, well, I was discharged 6 months ago. Oh, you paid everything on time. Let's go. So, different things like that. Now, it is a manual underwrite. Even though he's out of that bankruptcy because he's still within 2 years of the bankruptcy being discharged, they're a little more cautious about him. I don't have to go back to the judge because the bankruptcy is closed, but I gotta be careful with his debt ratio. I gotta be careful, make sure he's got enough reserves, enough assets left in the bank after we close.
Is it common?
No.
You don't deal with bankruptcies very often?
No, one every 6 months maybe. I mean, they're not as common as you think.
I think foreclosures in the past are more common.
From 2008,
from
8 to 12, yes. Now, they haven't been common since then because values have gone up. People have been able to get out of their house when they're in trouble.
Yes.
So, and that's our next two lines down. So, deed in lieu and foreclosure. Now, deed in lieu was kind of, it was a short sale.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I know I'm in trouble. You haven't started foreclosure process, but here it is. I got to walk away.
Okay.
So, both of those, you're going to need 2 or 3 years. I would say 3. VA is a little more lenient to veterans. They want to help veterans back into a house quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much, if you had a foreclosure, 3 years before anybody will touch you. So you're starting to get out of that window because 2012 was when they really started slowing down. Any other questions on that? This chart doesn't change a lot. But it's something that I keep on my desk.
I'd really like to have a copy of that.
Okay, I'll get y'all one. I'll get y'all one. This
is
something that I don't keep under. There's a couple things I keep under my keyboard that I use at minimum once a week.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's in a red folder right behind my chair.
Yeah.
Somebody calls me, wait, I got to grab my red folder. Hold on. I have a red folder of about 8 things.
I've been asked questions like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it would be good.
Uh-huh.
I'll
get you one. We can have that. All right. We talked about this a little bit, our automated underwriting systems versus manual underwriting. So let me go back. Oh, not that one. Okay, so every lender uses, it's called DU, desktop underwriting. Or DU is Fannie Mae's version. There's one called LP, Loan Prospector, which is Freddie's version. You can do both for any of the government loans. So the government loans don't care which one you use, they just want to have one that says approved. And that's what we're all looking for too. We're looking for the green approved, not the red refer or the red caution. Those are bad and we don't like to see red. But like we've talked about, it's not the end all of what we can do. It's, you know, it's just the baseline of, you got your approval, here's the 50 things you've got to go prove. And it gives us a list of what our processors have to start gathering. And that's why we're sometimes going back and forth. In a lot of cases, and it's annoying for me, so I know it's annoying for borrowers and for agents, when we go back and forth with guys a lot, with buyers. Why are we going back? Why are you still asking for stuff? 9 times out of 10, the reason we're asking for stuff still is because they gave us a bank statement and it caused more questions. We'll get into assets in a minute, but they gave us something that then opened another door.
So like a big deposit or a big check or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or one that I'm doing right now. They're moving here from Illinois, but she's keeping her business up there. Well, I'm keeping her off the loan because I didn't want to do anything with the business. Well, the business property is in his and her name. Well, he didn't tell me that his name was on the property. He didn't tell me that his name was on the business loan for the property. So now I got to go back and get more stuff from him on the business. It was, yes, the business pays for the mortgage and it's all in the business name. Well, that's not exactly correct. That may be how you pay it, but that's not how you signed it. And so my world changed this
morning.
But in
his mind, that's what he
yes.
needed to be.
On their taxes, that's the way it is.
Okay.
But on their, we pull up something called a fraud manager, which tells us if they have other properties all across the state, okay. all across the nation, actually. So when you buy a house, this is background, not even involved in this, but me on a rabbit hole. I own it. When you buy a house, there's a system called MERS. I don't even know what it stands for. MERS. That every transaction is recorded into with Freddie, Fannie, FHA, VA. And we pull a report as we're beginning a loan that's called a fraud manager. And this report will pull up if there are any other addresses or transactions in your name, anywhere in the nation. So if you have a common name, there can be other addresses that pop up. Well, 9 times out of 10, we can clear a lot of them out ourselves. But this situation, the fraud manager pulled up that his name was tied to the business address in Illinois. Well, I knew that was a business address in Illinois, so I couldn't mitigate it myself, and that's where the rabbit hole started.
Did you get it worked out?
When I sat down, I got an email from Paulette that they had cleared it up. Paulette processes for Mary and I both, and she is the best. I mean, everybody in North Texas wants Paulette to be their processor.
Awesome.
And Mary and I have her.
So
I sing her
we
praises.
We talk
every
about
day.
FHA, VA, USDA being government loans, mm-hmm. but Fannie and Freddie, they're not okay. FHA, USDA, VA are government insured.
Yes.
Are Fannie and Freddie?
No.
They're just government. They're just federal agencies.
Correct.
That's the difference.
They have private. So, and here's the crazy part, where it gets more confusing.
Thank you guys for joining us on the podcast today. Stay tuned for more coming from us soon.